binding promises. We stopped once to acquire a new car and get a map. The info Sonia had gleaned from Jill led us to a town called Sturgis. While it was in the western half of Michigan, it was also south, meaning the distance wasn't quite as long as we'd expected. Nonetheless, Dimitri drove at least 15 miles per hour over the speed limit the whole time.
"There," said Sonia, as we rolled into downtown Sturgis, which wasn't much of a downtown.
We were near a modest-looking motel on a side street.
"That's what she described, the Sunshine Motel."
Dimitri pulled into the lot behind the building, and we all sat there, staring at the motel, which didn't look as cheerful as its name. Like me, I presumed my companions were trying to figure out how to approach this. Jill's dream info had gotten us here, but Sonia had nothing else to help us find their room, if they were even still here. They certainly wouldn't have checked in under real names. I was going to suggest we just walk past the doors and hope Sonia would sense Robert when she suddenly pointed.
"That's their car," she said. "They're here."
Sure enough, there was the CRV we'd taken to Jill's house. Talk about karma. I'd swiped Victor's keys and he'd repaid the favor by taking ours. None of us had thought much about his escape vehicle in the ensuing chaos.
"Sloppy," murmured Dimitri, eyes narrowed thoughtfully. "They should have switched cars."
"That's Sydney's," I pointed out. "It's not technically stolen, so it's not on any police lists. Besides, something tells me Victor and Robert aren't hot-wiring pros like some people are."
"We'd left a string of stolen cars across the Midwest."
Dimitri nodded, like I'd actually just complimented him.
"Whatever the reason, it helps us."
"How do we find them?"
asked Sonia. I was about to suggest the Aura plan, but dismissed it. Robert would send Sonia at the same moment, giving him brief warning. Plus, when we found the brothers, there'd likely be a fight. Doing it in the motel would attract attention. This parking lot was in back, away from the main road.
"We wait," I said.
"It's amazing enough that they even stopped this long. If they have any sense, they'll leave soon."
"Agreed," said Dimitri, catching my eyes. "Souls in sync."
The memory of that near kiss returned and I looked away, fearing what my face would betray.
"The lot's easy to defend, too. Not much room for escape."
It was true. The motel flanked one side, a concrete wall the other. There weren't many other buildings nearby, either. He moved our car to the farthest spot he could in the lot, providing us with a full view of it and the motel's exit, but keeping us semi-concealed. We considered sitting in the car, but Dimitri and I decided we should wait outside, giving us more mobility. We left Sonia inside. This wasn't her fight. Standing behind the car with Dimitri, in the shadow of a leafy maple, I became acutely aware of his proximity and fierce warrior stance. He might be missing his duster, but I had to admit I liked the view of him I got without the coat.
"I don't suppose," I said softly, "that we're going to talk about this morning?"
Dimitri's eyes were fixed so hard on the CRV that he might have been trying to make Jill and the brothers materialize inside it. I wasn't fooled. He was just avoiding looking at me.
"There's nothing to talk about."
"I knew you'd say that. Actually, it was a toss-up between that and I don't know what you're talking about."
Dimitri sighed. "But," I continued, "there is something to talk about. Like when you almost kissed me? And what did you mean about the right thing?" Silence.
"You wanted to kiss me."
It was hard to keep my voice low.
"I saw it."
"Just because we want something doesn't mean it's right."
"What I said. It's true, isn't it? You can love, can't you? I realize now that right after the transformation, you really didn't think you could. And you probably couldn't. But things have changed. You're getting yourself back."
Dimitri gave me a sidelong look.
"Yes. Things have changed. And some haven't."
"Okay, Mr. Enigma. That doesn't help explain the right thing comment."
Frustration filled his features.
"Rose," I've done a lot of bad things, most of which I can never fix or find redemption for. My only choice now, if I want to reclaim my life, is to go forward, stopping evil and doing what's right. And what is not right is taking a woman from another man, a man I like and respect. I'll steal cars, I'll break into houses, but there are lines I will not cross, no matter what I...
The motel's back door opening jolted us to attention. It was no wonder my love life was so messed up, when the most profound and intimate moments were always being interrupted by dire situations. It was just as well, because I had never, ever seen that line coming. What is not right is taking a woman from another man, a man I like and respect. New drama took precedence. Victor stepped outside, with Robert and Jill walking side by side behind him. I'd half expected to see her tied up, and was surprised that she accompanied them so calmly. Too calmly, I soon realized. It wasn't natural. There was an almost robotic feel to her movements. She was being compelled into docility.
"Compulsion," said Dimitri quietly, recognizing it as well. "Go for Victor. I'll get Robert."
I nodded. "Jill will run as soon as the compulsion's broken, I hope." I didn't put it past her to join our fight, which could cause more harm than good. We'd find out soon enough. Mercifully, no one else was around. It was still fairly early in the morning. Dimitri and I sprang out from our hiding spots, crossing the distance of the parking lot in a matter of moments. Two healthy Dompiers could outrace two old Maroi any day, and as crafty as they might be, the brothers hadn't expected us. In my periphery, I just barely saw Dimitri kicking into warrior god mode, fierce and unstoppable. Then I focused entirely on Victor, throwing my full weight at him and knocking him to the ground. He hit hard against the asphalt, and I pinned him down, slamming my fist into his face and making his nose bleed.
"Well done," he gasped out. "I've been wanting to do that for a very long time," I growled.
Victor smiled through the pain and the blood.
"Of course you have. I used to think Belikov was the savage one, but it's really you, isn't it? You're the animal with no control, no higher reasoning except to fight and kill."
I clenched his shirt and leaned over him.
"Me? I'm not the one who tortured Lyssa for my own benefit. I'm not the one who turned my daughter Strigoi, and I'm sure as hell not the one who used compulsion to kidnap a 15-year-old girl."
To my disgust, he kept that maddening smile on his face.
"She's valuable, Rose. So, so valuable. You have no idea how much so." "She's not an object for you to manipulate," I cried. "She's a... ah!"
The ground suddenly rolled up beneath me, a mini earthquake centered around us. The asphalt bucked up, giving Victor the leverage to push me off. It wasn't a strong push, and I could have easily recovered my balance if not for the ground rippling and surrounding me, rolling like ocean waves to knock me over. Victor was using his earth magic to control the area where I stood. Faint cries of surprise told me others were feeling a little of it, but the magic was clearly focused on me. Not without cost, though. Victor was an old man I'd just shoved onto asphalt and punched. Pain and fatigue were all over him, and his labored breathing told me wielding magic this powerful, something I'd never seen an Earth user do, was pushing every ounce of strength he had left. One good punch. That was all I needed. One good punch would knock him down and take him out of this fight. Only I was the one being taken down. Literally. Try as I might, my personal earthquake got the best of me, knocking me to my knees. I was still in that stupid dress, too, meaning my newly healed legs got scraped again. And once I was down, the asphalt rose around me. I realized Victor was going to ensnare me by creating a stone prison. I couldn't let that happen.
"All that brawn for nothing," gasped out Victor, sweat pouring off his face. "It does you no good in the end. Real power is in the mind, in cunning. In controlling Jillian, I control Vasilisa.
With Vasilisa, I control the Dragomirs. And from there, the Moroi. That's power. That's strength.
Most of his smug tirade went over me, but part of it stuck. In controlling Jillian, I control Vasilisa. Lyssa, I couldn't let him hurt her. I couldn't let him use her. In fact, I couldn't let him use Jill either. Lyssa had given me a chutki, which was kind of a cross between a bracelet and a rosary. It was a Dragomir heirloom, bestowed upon those who protected the family. That was my duty, to protect all the Dragomirs. The old guardian mantra rang in my mind. They come first. With skill I didn't know I possessed, I sized up the shaking ground and attempted to stand again. I made it, practically dancing in that parking lot. And as I stared at Victor, I felt what Sonya had warned about. The catalyst. The spark that would ignite the darkness I'd gathered from Lyssa. In looking at him, I saw all the evils of my life in one man. Was that entirely accurate? No, not exactly. But he had hurt my best friend. Nearly killed her. He'd toyed with Dimitri and me, complicating what was already a mess of a relationship. He was now trying to control others. When would it end? When would his evil stop? Red and black tinged my vision. I heard a voice call my name, Sonya's, I think. But in that moment, there was nothing else in the world but Victor and my hate for him. I sprang at him, fueled by rage and adrenaline, leaping out of the epicenter of shaking ground that threatened to seize me. Once more, I threw myself at him, but we didn't hit the ground. We'd shifted position slightly, and instead, we hit the concrete wall, with just as much force as I might have thrown a Strigoi. His head bent back at the impact. I heard an odd cracking sound, and Victor slumped to the ground. I immediately dropped down, grabbing his arms and shaking him. "Get up!" I screamed. "Get up and fight me!" But no matter how much I shook him or yelled, Victor would not stand. He wouldn't move on his own. Hands grabbed me, trying futilely to pull me away. "Rose! Rose! Stop! Stop this!" I ignored the voice, ignored the hands. I was all anger and power, needing Victor to face me once and for all. Suddenly, a strange sensation crept along me, like fingertips across my skin. Let him go. I didn't want to, but for half a second it seemed like a reasonable idea. I loosened my hold slightly, just enough for those hands to jerk me away. Like that, I snapped out of the haze and realized what had happened. The person who'd pulled me was Sonya, and she'd used a tiny bit of compulsion to get me away and let go of Victor. She was strong enough in her power that she didn't even need eye contact. She held on to me, even though she had to know it was wasted effort. "I have to stop him," I said, wriggling from her grasp. "He has to pay." I reached for him again. Sony gave up on physical restraint, appealing to words instead. "Rose, he's dead. Can't you see that? Dead. Victor's dead." No, I didn't see that, not at first. All I saw was my blind obsession, my need to get to Victor. But then, her words broke through to me. As I gripped Victor, I felt the limpness in his body. I saw the eyes that looked blankly at nothing. That crazy, churning emotion in me faded, transforming into shock. My grip slackened as I stared at him and truly understood what she had said. Understood what I had done. Then, I heard a terrible sound. A low wailing broke through the frozen horror in my mind. I glanced back in alarm and saw Dimitri standing with Robert. Robert's arms were pinned behind his back as Dimitri effortlessly held him. But the Moroi was doing everything in his power and failing to break free. Jill stood nearby, looking uneasily at all of us, confused and afraid. "Victor! Victor!" Robert's pleas were muffled by sobs, and as useless as my own efforts to get Victor up. I dragged my gaze back down to the body before me, barely believing what I had just done. I thought the Guardians had been crazy in their reaction to Eddie killing a Moroi, but now I was starting to understand. A monster like a Strigoi was one thing. But the life of a person? Even a person who...
Get him out of here!
Sonya was so near me that the unexpected exclamation made me wince. She'd been kneeling too, but now jumped to her feet, turning toward Dimitri.
Get him out of here! As far as you can!
Dimitri looked surprised, but the powerful command in her voice drove him to instant action. He began dragging Robert away. After a few moments, Dimitri simply opted to toss the man over his shoulder and cart him off. I would have expected cries of protest, but Robert had fallen silent. His eyes were on Victor's body, their gaze so sharp, so focused that they seemed like they could burn a hole through someone. Sonya, not having my fanciful impression, thrust herself between the brothers and dropped to the ground again, covering Victor's body with her own.
Get him out of here! She called again. He's trying to bring Victor back! He'll be shadow-kissed!
I was still confused and upset, still appalled at what I'd done. But the danger of what she said hit me hard. Robert couldn't be allowed to bring Victor back. The brothers were dangerous enough without being bonded. Victor couldn't be allowed to summon ghosts the way I could. Victor had to stay dead.
Doesn't he have to touch the body? I asked. To finish the bond, yes. But he was wielding tons of spirit just now, calling Victor's soul back and cubing it around. She explained.
When Dimitri and Robert were gone, Sonya told me to help her move the body. We'd made too much noise and it was a wonder no one had come out yet. Jill joined us, and I moved without really being aware of what I was doing. Sonya found the keys to the CRV on Victor and flattened the back seats to increase the rear cargo space. We crawled into it, the three of us having to hunch down to stay out of sight. We soon heard voices, people coming to see what had happened. I don't know how long they were in the parking lot, only that they mercifully didn't search cars. Honestly, I had few coherent thoughts at all. That rage was gone, but my mind was a mess. I couldn't seem to get a hold of anything concrete. I felt sick and just followed Sonya's orders, staying low as I tried not to look at Victor's body. Even after the voices were gone, she kept us in the car. At last, she exhaled a deep breath and focused on me.
Rose?
I didn't answer right away.
Rose?
Yeah? I asked, voice cracking. Her voice was soothing and cajoling. I felt that crawling on my skin again and a need to please her.
I need you to look at the dead. Open your eyes to them.
The dead? No. My mind felt out of control and I had enough sense to know bringing ghosts here would be a bad idea.
I can't. You can, she said. I'll help you, please.
I couldn't refuse her compulsion. Expanding my senses, I let down the walls I kept around me. They were the walls that blocked me from the world of the dead and the ghosts that followed me around. Within moments, translucent faces appeared before me, some like normal people and others terrible and ghastly. Their mouths open, wanting to speak but unable to.
What do you see?
Asked Sonya. Spirits, I whispered.
Do you see Victor?
I peered into the swarm of faces, seeking anyone familiar.
No. Push them back, she said. Put your walls back up.
I tried to do as she said, but it was hard. I didn't have the will. I felt outside encouragement and realized Sonya was still compelling me. She couldn't make the ghosts disappear, but feelings of support and determination strengthened me. I shut out the restless dead.
He's gone then, Sonya said. He's either completely consumed by the world of the dead or is wandering as a restless spirit. Regardless, any lingering threads to life are gone. He can't come back to life. She turned to Jill. Go get Dimitri.
I don't know where he is, said Jill, startled.
Sonya smiled, but it didn't reach her eyes.
Close, I'm sure.
And watching. Go walk around the motel, the block, whatever. He'll find you. Jill left, needing no compulsion. When she was gone, I buried my face in my hands.
Oh, God. Oh, God, all this time I denied it, but it's true. I am a murderer.
Don't think about that yet, said Sonia. Her take-charge attitude was almost comforting. Almost. It was easier to take orders than fend for yourself.
Deal with your guilt later. For now, we have to get rid of the body.
I uncovered my eyes and forced myself to look at Victor. Nausea welled up within me, and those crazy feelings spun even more out of control. I gave a harsh laugh.
Yes, the body. I wish Sydney was here, but we don't have any magic potions. The sun won't destroy him. Weird, isn't it? Strigoi are harder to kill. Harder to kill, easier to clean up.
I laughed again because there was something familiar about my rambling. It was like Adrian in one of his weird moments, or Lyssa when Spirit had pushed her to the edge.
This is it, isn't it?
I asked Sonia.
The flood. The flood you warned me about. Lyssa escaped Spirit, but it finally defeated me. Just like Anna. Just like the dream. Oh, God. This is the dream, isn't it? But I won't wake up.
Sonia was staring at me, her blue eyes wide with fear? Mockery? Alarm? She reached out and took my hand.
Stay with me, Rose. We'll push it back.
A knock at the window startled us both, and Sonia let Jill and Dimitri in.
Where's Robert?
Asked Sonia. Dimitri glanced down at Victor and then promptly looked away.
Unconscious, hidden in some bushes around the corner.
Charming, said Sonia. Do you think that's smart, leaving him?
He shrugged.
I figured I shouldn't be seen carrying an unconscious guy in my arms. In fact, yes, I think we should just leave him there. He'll wake up. He's not a fugitive. And without Victor, he's, well, not harmless, but less harmful. We can't keep dragging him with us anyway.
I laughed again. That laugh that seemed unhinged and hysterical even to me.
He's unconscious. Of course, of course. You can do that. You can do the right thing, not me.
I looked down at Victor.
An animal, he said. He was right. No higher reasoning.
I wrapped my arms around myself, my fingernails digging into my skin so hard they drew blood. Physical pain to make the mental pain go away. Wasn't that what Lyssa had always said? Dimitri stared at me and then turned to Sonia.
What's wrong?
He demanded. I'd seen him risk his life over and over, but never until now had he truly looked afraid.
Spirit, said Sonia. She's pulled and pulled for so long, and managed to hold it back. It's been waiting, though, always waiting.
She frowned slightly, maybe realizing she was starting to sound like me. She turned to Jill.
Is that silver?
Jill looked down at the heart-shaped locket around her neck.
I think so.
Can I have it?
Jill undid the clasp and passed it over. Sonia held it between her palms and closed her eyes a moment, pursing her lips. A few seconds later, her eyes opened and she handed me the locket.
Put it on.
Just touching it gave me a strange tingling in my skin.
The heart.
I looked at Dimitri as I fastened the clasp.
Do you remember that? Where is the heart, you asked? And here it is, hear it.
I stopped. The world suddenly became crisper. My jumbled thoughts slowly began to move back together, forming some semblance of rationality. I stared at my companions, the living ones, truly seeing them now. I touched the locket.
This is a healing charm. Sonia nodded. I didn't know if it'd work on the mind. I don't think it's a permanent fix. But between it and your own will, you'll be okay for a while.
I tried not to focus on those last words, for a while. Instead, I tried to make sense of the world around me, of the body in front of me.
What have I done?
I whispered. Jill put her arm around me, but it was Dimitri who spoke.
What you had to.
Chapter 29.
The events that followed were a blur. Sonya might have kept Spirit's touch at bay, but it didn't matter. I was still in shock, still unable to think. They put me in the front seat as far from Victor as possible. Dimitri drove us somewhere. I didn't pay much attention. Where he and Sonya disposed of the body. They didn't say much, only that it was taken care of. I didn't ask for details. After that, we were back and headed toward court. Sonya and Dimitri tossed around options on what to do when we got there. Seeing as no one had yet cleared my name, the current plan was that Sonya would have to escort Jill into court. Jill asked if she could call her parents to let them know she was okay, but Dimitri felt that was a security risk. Sonya said she'd try to reach Emily in a dream, which made Jill feel a little better. I coped during the drive by checking in on Lissa. Focusing on her took me away from the horrible guilt and emptiness I felt. The horror at what I'd done to Victor. When I was with Lissa, I wasn't me. And just then, that was my greatest desire. I didn't want to be me. But things weren't perfect for her either. Like always, a number of issues were weighing her down. She felt close, so, so close to unraveling who had killed Tatiana. The answer seemed within her grasp, if only she could reach just a little farther. The guardians had dragged Joe the janitor in, and after a fair amount of coercion, they had methods that didn't require magical compulsion. He'd admitted to having seen the twisted-handed Maroi in my building on the night of the murder. No amount of pushing would get Joe to admit he had been paid off, by either the man or Daniela. The most he'd admit was that he might have been a little off in his times that night. It was by no means hard evidence to save me. Lissa had Ambrose's letter, too, which had subtly threatened Tatiana. The writer had opposed the age law for being soft, disapproved of Tatiana's endorsement of Spirit, and resented the secret training sessions. The letter might have been perfectly polite, but whoever penned it had had a serious grudge against the Queen. That supported the political motive theories. Of course, there were still lots of personal motives for the murder, too. The sordid mess with Ambrose, Blake, and the women involved pegged any of them as the murderer. Daniela Ivashkov being on that list was a constant point of stress for Lissa, and she dared not breathe a word to Adrian. The saving grace there was that Daniela's bribery had been to get Adrian out of trouble, not solidify my guilt. The unknown Maroi had funded that bribe. Surely if she had killed Tatiana, Daniela would have paid for both of Joe's lies. And of course, there was the last test pressing against Lissa's mind. The riddle. The riddle that seemed to have so many answers, and yet none at all. What must a queen possess in order to truly rule her people? In some ways, it was more difficult than the other tests. Those had had a hands-on component, so to speak. This was her own intellect. No fire to build, no fear to look in the eye. She hated that she took the riddle so seriously, too. She didn't need its stress, not with everything else going on. Life would have been simpler if she'd kept treating the trials simply as a scam to buy us time. The court was continually swelling with those who had come to see the election, and more of them, much to her disbelief, were throwing their support behind her. She could hardly walk anywhere without people calling out about the dragon or Alexandra Reborn. Word of her attack had gotten out too, which seemed to have fueled her supporters even more. But, of course, Lissa still had plenty of opposition. The biggest case against her was the same old legal one, that she wouldn't be eligible for votes when the time came. Another mark against her was her age. She was too young, her opponent said. Who would want a child on the throne? But Lissa's admirers wouldn't hear any of it. They kept citing young Alexandra's rule and the miracles Lissa had wrought with her healing. Age was irrelevant. The Maroi needed young blood, they cried. They also demanded the voting laws be changed. Unsurprisingly, her opponents also kept bringing up the fact that she was tied to a queen-killing murderer. I'd have thought that would have been the biggest issue in her candidacy.
but she'd been so convincing about how I'd shocked and betrayed her that many felt her being queen would actually right the wrong I'd committed. She'd used bits of compulsion whenever the topic came up, which also went a long way in making others think she was now completely dissociated from me.
"I'm so tired of this," Lissa told Christian back in her room.
She'd sought escape there and was lying on her bed in his arms. My mom was there on guard.
"This queen thing was a horrible idea."
Christian stroked her hair.
"It's not. Abe said the election will be delayed because of the uproar. And no matter how much you complain, I know you're proud you made it this far."
It was true. The chalice test had cut the nominees in half. Only 5 remained. Ariana Zelsky was one of them, as was Daniela's cousin Rufus Taurus. Lissa was the 3rd, with Marcus Lazar and Marie Conta rounding out the group. Ronald Uzera hadn't made it through. My mother spoke up.
"I've never seen anything like this. It's incredible how much support you're getting. The council and other royals are under no obligations to change the law. But the mob's loud, and gaining the love of commoners could benefit certain royals. Standing by your claim to run would certainly reflect well on a couple families that are out of favor. What's holding them back is the thought that you might actually win, so they'll just keep arguing and arguing."
Lissa stiffened.
"Winning? That's not really possible, is it? Ariana's got it sealed, right?"
Winning had never been a part of this crazy plan. And now, with so few candidates, the pressure was even greater to get Ariana on the throne. As far as Lissa was concerned, the other candidates showed no promise of improving Maroi life. Ariana had to win.
"I'd say so," said Janine.
There was pride in her voice, seeing how close she was to the Zelsky family.
"Ariana's brilliant and competent, and most people know it. She'd treat Dompierre's fairly, more so than some of the other candidates. She's already spoken about reversing the age law."
The thought of worse laws oppressing the Dompierres made Lissa's stomach sink.
"God, I hope she wins. We can't have anything else go wrong."
A knock at the door snapped my mom into full guardian mode until Lissa said,
"It's Adrian."
"Well," muttered Christian, "at least his timing's better than usual."
Sure enough, my boyfriend entered, wreathed in his now usual scent of smoke and liquor. True, his vices were the least of my concerns, but it kept bugging me that he needed me to be there in person to enforce his good behavior. It reminded me of when he said I was his strength.
"Get up, guys."
He looked very pleased with himself.
"We've got a visit to pay."
Lissa sat up puzzled.
"What are you talking about?"
"I am not hanging out with Blake Lazar again,"
warned Christian.
"You and me both,"
said Adrian.
"I've got someone better and more attractive.
Remember how you were wondering how close Serena was to Grant?
Well, looks like you can ask her yourself. I found her, and yes, you're welcome."
A frown crossed my mother's face.
"Last I heard, Serena had been sent away to teach at a school. Went on the East Coast, I think."
After the Strigoi attack that had killed Grant and several others, the Guardians had decided to pull Serena from active bodyguard duty for a while. She'd been the only Guardian to survive.
"She is, but since it's summer, they brought her back to help with election crowd control. She's working the front gates."
Lissa and Christian exchanged looks.
"We have to talk to her," said Lissa excitedly. "She might have known who Grant was secretly teaching."
"That doesn't mean one of them killed Tatiana," warned my mother.
Lissa nodded.
"No, but there's a connection. If Ambrose's letter is right, she's there now? At the gates?"
"Yep,"
said Adrian.
"And we probably don't even need to buy her a drink."
"Then let's go."
Lissa stood and reached for her shoes.
"Are you sure?"
asked Christian.
"You know what's waiting out there."
Lissa hesitated. It was late at night for Maroi, but that didn't mean everyone was in bed, especially at the gates, which was always jam-packed with people lately.
Clearing my name was too important, Lissa decided.
Yeah, let's do it.
With my mother leading the way, my friends made their way to the court's entrance. The door that Abe had made had been patched up. The court was surrounded in high, multicolored stone walls that helped further the human image that this was actually an elite school. Wrought iron gates at the entrance stood open, but a group of guardians blocked the road leading into court grounds. Normally, only two guardians would have manned the booth at the gate. The extra numbers were both for greater interrogation of cars and for crowd control. Spectators lined the road's sides, watching the arriving cars as though they were at a red carpet premiere. Janine knew a roundabout way that avoided some people, but not all.
"Don't cringe,"
Christian told Lissa as they passed a particularly vocal group which had noticed her.
"You're a queenly nominee. Act like it. You deserve this. You're the last Dragomir, a daughter of royalty."
Lissa gave him a brief, astonished look, surprised to hear the fierceness in his voice, and that he clearly believed his words. Straightening up, she turned toward her fans, smiling and waving back, which excited them that much more. "Take this seriously," she reminded herself. "Don't disgrace our history." In the end, getting through the crowd to the gate proved easier than getting time alone with Serena. The guardians were swamped and insisted on keeping Serena for screening. But my mom had a quick conversation with the guardian in charge. She reminded him of Lissa's importance and offered to stand in for Serena for a few minutes. Serena had long since healed from the Strigoi attack. She was my age, blonde-haired and pretty. She was clearly surprised to see her former charge.
"Princess," she said, maintaining formalities.
"How can I help you?"
Lissa pulled Serena away from the cluster of guardians speaking to the Maroi drivers lined up at the gate.
"You can call me Lissa. You know that. You taught me the stab pillars, after all."
Serena gave her a small smile.
"Things have changed. You might be our next queen."
Lissa grimaced.
"Unlikely.
Especially since I have no clue how to solve that riddle," she thought.
"But I do need your help. You and Grant spent a lot of time together. Did he ever mention training Maroi for Tatiana? Like secret combat sessions?"
Serena's face gave the answer away, and she averted her eyes.
"I'm not supposed to talk about that. He wasn't even supposed to tell me."
Lissa gripped the young guardian's arm in excitement, making Serena flinch.
"You have to tell me what you know. Anything. Who he was training, how they felt about it, who was successful, anything."
Serena paled.
"I can't," she whispered. "It was done in secret, on the queen's orders."
"My aunt's dead," said Adrian bluntly. "And you said yourself you might be talking to the future queen."
This earned a glare from Lissa. Serena hesitated, then took a deep breath.
"I can pull together a list of names. I might not remember all of them, though. And I have no clue how well they were doing, only that a lot resented it. Grant felt like Tatiana had purposely picked those most unwilling."
Lissa squeezed her hand.
"Thank you. Thank you so much."
Serena still looked pained at giving up the secret information. "They come first" didn't always work when your loyalties were split.
"I'll have to get it to you later, though. They need me here."
Serena returned to her post, bringing my mother back to Lissa. As for me, I returned to my own reality in the car, which had come to a stop. I blinked to clear my eyes and take in our surroundings. Another hotel. We should have had gold member status by now.
"What's going on?"
"We're stopping," said Dimitri. "You need to rest."
"No, I don't. We need to keep going to court. We need to get Jill there in time for the elections."
Our initial goal in finding Jill had been to give Lissa voting power. It had since occurred to us that if Lissa Running was mucking up the elections, the surprise appearance of her sister would likely create just as much sensation and disbelief. A genetic test would clear up any doubts and give Lissa her voting power. But the initial confusion would buy us more of the time we so badly needed to find the murderer. In spite of the random evidence my friends kept turning up, they still had no substantial theories on a culprit. Dimitri gave me a don't-lie-to-me look.
You were just with Lisa. Are the elections actually happening yet?
No, I admitted.
Then you're getting some rest.
I'm fine, I snapped. But those fools wouldn't listen to me. Checking in was complicated, because none of us had a credit card and it wasn't the hotel's policy to take a cash deposit. Sonia compelled the desk clerk into thinking it was their policy, and before long, we had booked two adjoining rooms.
Let me talk to her alone,
Dimitri murmured to Sonia.
I can handle it.
Be careful, Sonia warned. She's fragile.
You guys, I'm right here, I exclaimed. Sonia took Jill's arm and guided her into one of the rooms.
Come on, let's order room service.
Dimitri opened the other door and looked at me expectantly. With a sigh, I followed and sat on the bed, my arms crossed. The room was 100 times nicer than the one in West Virginia. Can we order room service? He pulled up a chair and sat opposite me, only a couple feet away.
We need to talk about what happened with Victor.
There's nothing to talk about, I said bleakly. The dark feelings I'd been shoving back during the drive suddenly fell upon me. They smothered me. I felt more claustrophobic than when I'd been in the cell. Guilt was its own prison.
I really am the murderer everyone says I am.
It doesn't matter that it was Victor. I killed him in cold blood.
That was hardly cold blood.
The hell it wasn't! I cried, feeling tears spring to my eyes. The plan was to subdue him and Robert so we could free Jill. Subdue! Victor wasn't a threat to me. He was an old man, for God's sake.
He seemed like a threat,
said Dimitri. His calmness was the counter to my growing hysteria, as usual.
He was using his magic.
I shook my head, burying my face in my hands. It wasn't going to kill me. He probably couldn't have even kept it up much longer. I could have waited it out or escaped. Hell, I did escape, but instead of capturing him, I slammed him against a concrete wall. He was no match for me, an old man. I killed an old man. Yeah, maybe he was a scheming, corrupt old man, but I didn't want him dead. I wanted him locked up again. I wanted him to spend the rest of his life in prison, living with his crimes. Living, Dimitri. It seemed strange that I'd feel this way, considering how much I hated Victor. But it was true. It hadn't been a fair fight. I'd acted without thinking. My training had always been about defense and striking out against monsters. Honor had never really come up, but suddenly, it meant a lot to me. There was no honor in what I did to him.
Sonia said it wasn't your fault.
Dimitri's voice was still gentle, which somehow made me feel worse. I wished he'd chastise me, confirming the guilt I felt. I wanted him to be my critical instructor.
She said it was a backlash of spirit.
It was... I paused, recalling the haze of that fight as best I could. I never really understood what Lissa experienced in her worst moments until then. I just looked at Victor, and I saw everything evil in the world. An evil I had to stop. He was bad, but he didn't deserve that. He never stood a chance. Honor, I kept thinking. What honor is there in that?
You aren't listening, Rose. It wasn't your fault. Spirits are powerful magic we barely understand. And its dark edge, well, we know it's capable of terrible things. Things that can't be controlled.
I lifted my eyes to his.
I should have been stronger than it.
There it was. The thought behind all my guilt, all these horrible emotions.
I should have been stronger than it. I was weak.
Dimitri's reassuring words didn't come so quickly.
You aren't invincible,
he said at last.
No one expects you to be.
I do. What I did...
I swallowed.
What I did was unforgivable.
His eyes widened in shock.
That's crazy, Rose. You can't punish yourself for something you had no power over.
Yeah? Then why are you still...
I stopped because I'd been about to accuse Dimitri of continuing to punish himself. Except, he no longer was. Did he feel guilt for what he'd done as a Strigoi? I was certain of it. Sonya had admitted as much. But somewhere in this journey, he had taken control of his life again, bit by bit. She told me that, but only now did I truly understand.
When?
I asked. When did it change? When did you realize you could keep living, even after all that guilt?
I'm not sure.
If the question surprised him, he hid it. His eyes were locked with mine, but they weren't quite focused on me. The puzzle occupied him.
In bits, really. When Lisa and Abe first came to me about breaking you out, I was ready to do it because she asked me to. Then the more I thought about it, the more I realized it was personal, too. I couldn't stand the thought of you locked in a cell, being cut off from the world. It wasn't right. No one should live like that. And it occurred to me that I was doing the same, by choice. I was cutting myself off from the world with guilt and self-punishment. I had a second chance to live, and I was throwing it away.
I was still in turmoil, still raging and full of grief, but his story kept me quiet and transfixed. Hearing him pour his heart out was a rare opportunity.
You heard me talk about this before,
he continued,
about my goal to appreciate life's little details. And the more we continued on our journey, the more I remembered who I was. Not just a fighter. Fighting is easy. It's why we fight that matters. And in the alley that night with Donovan...
He shuddered.
That was the moment I could have crossed over into someone who fights just to senselessly kill. But you pulled me back, Rose. That was the turning point. You saved me. Just as Lisa saved me with the stake. I knew then that in order to leave the Strigoi part of me behind, I had to fight through to be what they aren't. I had to embrace what they reject. Beauty, love, honor.
Right then, I was two people. One was overjoyed. Hearing him talk like that, realizing he was fighting his demons and close to victory. Well, I nearly wept with joy. It was what I'd wanted for him for so long. At the same time, his inspiring words only reminded me how far I'd fallen. My sorrow and self-pity took over again.
Then you should understand, I said bitterly. You just said it. Honor. It matters. We both know it does. I've lost mine. I lost it out there in the parking lot when I killed an innocent.
And I've killed hundreds, he said flatly. People much more innocent than Victor Dashkov.
It's not the same. You couldn't help it. My feelings exploded to the surface again. Why are we repeating the same things over and over?
Because they aren't sinking in. You couldn't help it either.
His patience was cracking.
Feel guilty, mourn this, but move on. Don't let it destroy you. Forgive yourself.
I leapt to my feet, catching him by surprise. I leaned down, putting us face to face.
Forgive myself? That's what you want? You, of all people?
Words seemed to escape him. I think it had to do with my proximity. He managed a nod.
Then tell me this. You say you moved past the guilt, decided to revel in life and all that? I get it. But have you, in your heart, really forgiven yourself?
I told you a long time ago that I forgave you for everything in Siberia. But what about you? Have you done it?
I just said...
No. It's not the same. You're telling me to forgive myself and move on. But you won't do it yourself. You're a hypocrite, comrade. We're either both guilty or both innocent. Pick.
He rose as well, looking down at me from that lofty height.
It's not that simple.
I crossed my arms over my chest, refusing to be intimidated.
It is that simple. We're the same. Even Sonya says we are. We've always been the same, and we're both acting the same stupid way now. We hold ourselves up to a higher standard than everyone else.
Aye, Sonya? What does she have to do with any of this?
She said our auras match. She said we light up around each other. She says it means you still love me and that we're in sync, and...
I sighed and turned away, wandering across the room. I don't know. I shouldn't have mentioned it. We shouldn't buy into this aura stuff when it comes from magic users who are already half insane. I reached the window and leaned my forehead against the cool glass, trying to decide what to do. Forgive myself. Could I? A small city sprawled before me, though I'd lost track of where we were. Cars and people moved below, souls outliving their lives. I took a deep breath. The image of Victor on the asphalt was going to stay with me for a long, long time. I had done something horrible, even if my intentions were good. But everyone was right. I hadn't been myself. Did that change what had happened? Would that bring Victor back? No. And honestly, I didn't know how I would move past what I'd done. How I'd shake the bloody images in my head. I just knew I had to go on. If I let this stop me, I murmured. If I do nothing, then that's the greater evil. I'll do more good by surviving, by continuing to fight and protect others.
What are you saying?
Asked Dimitri.
I'm saying I forgive myself. That doesn't make everything perfect, but it's a start.
My fingertip traced the line of a tiny crack in the glass's surface. Who knows? Maybe that outburst in the parking lot let out some of the darkness Sonya says is in my aura. Skeptic that I am, I have to give her some points. She was right that I was at a breaking point, that all I needed was a spark.
She was right about something else, too,
Dimitri said after a long pause. My back was to him, but there was a strange quality to his voice that made me turn around. What's that? I asked.
That I do still love you.
With that one sentence, everything in the universe changed. Time slowed to one heartbeat. The world became his eyes, his voice. This wasn't happening. It wasn't real. None of it could be real. It felt like a spirit dream. I resisted the urge to close my eyes and see if I'd wake up moments later. No. No matter how unbelievable it all seemed, this was no dream. This was real. This was life. This was flesh and blood. Since when? I finally managed to ask.
Since forever.
His tone implied the answer was obvious.
I denied it when I was restored. I had no room for anything in my heart except guilt. I especially felt guilty about you, what I'd done, and I pushed you away. I put up a wall to keep you safe. It worked for a while. Until my heart finally started accepting other emotions. and it all came back. Everything I felt for you. It had never left. It was just hidden from me until I was ready. And again, that alley was the turning point. I looked at you, saw your goodness, your hope, and your faith. Those are what make you beautiful. So, so beautiful.
So, it wasn't my hair? I said, unsure how I was even capable of making a joke at a time like this.
No, he said gently. Your hair was beautiful, too. All of you. You were amazing when we first met, and somehow, inexplicably, you've come even farther. You've always been pure, raw energy, and now you control it. You're the most amazing woman I've ever met, and I'm glad to have had that love for you in my life. I regret losing it.
He grew pensive.
I would give anything, anything in the world to go back and change history. To run into your arms after Lisa brought me back. To have a life with you. It's too late, of course, but I've accepted it.
Why? Why is it too late? Dimitri's eyes grew sad.
Because of Adrian. Because you've moved on.
No, listen, he said, cutting off my protests. You were right to do that after how I treated you. And more than anything else, I want you to be happy once we clear your name and get Jill recognized. You said yourself that Adrian makes you happy. You said you love him.
But you just said you love me. That you want to be with me. My words seemed clumsy, unworthy of his eloquence.
And I told you, I'm not going to pursue another man's girlfriend. You want to talk honor? There it is in its purest form.
I walked toward him, each step ramping up the tension around us. Dimitri kept saying the alley was his turning point. For me, it was now. I stood on the precipice of something that would change my life. For the last week, I'd done a very good job of detaching myself from anything romantic with Dimitri. And yet, had I? What was love, really? Flowers, chocolate, and poetry? Or was it something else? Was it being able to finish someone's jokes? Was it having absolute faith that someone was there at your back? Was it knowing someone so well that they instantly understood why you did the things you did? And shared those same beliefs? All week, I'd claimed my love for Dimitri was fading. In reality, it had been growing more and more. I hadn't even realized it was happening. I had been reestablishing our old rapport, strengthening the connections, reaffirming that of all the people in the world, even Lissa, Dimitri was the only one who truly got me. I'd meant it. I loved Adrian. It was hard to imagine life without him. But my other words at the Mastranos had betrayed me. I have fun with him. Now, you should have fun with the one you loved. But that shouldn't have been what first came to mind. I should have said, we strengthen each other, or he makes me want to be a better person. Perhaps most importantly, he understands me perfectly. But none of that was true. So I hadn't said those things. I'd sought Adrian for comfort. His familiarity and humor were an important part of my world. And if he was in danger, I'd throw my life before his. Just as I would for Lissa. Yet, I didn't inspire him, not really. He was trying. He did want to be a better person. But at this moment in his life, his motivations were more about impressing others, about impressing me. It wasn't for himself. That didn't make him bad or weak, but it made me his crutch. He would get past that, I was certain. He would eventually come into his own and be an amazing man. But he wasn't at that point of self-discovery yet. I was. I stood in front of Dimitri now, looking into those dark eyes again, the eyes I loved so much. I placed my hands on his chest, feeling his heart beating strong and steady,
and maybe a bit faster than normal. Warmth spread through my fingertips. He reached up and caught hold of my wrists, but didn't push me away. The lines of that gorgeous face looked strained as he fought some inner conflict. But now that I knew for sure, I could see his love for me. Love mingled with desire. It was so, so obvious.
You should have told me, I said.
You should have told me this a long time ago. I love you. I've never stopped loving you. You have to know that. His breath caught when I said, I love you, and I could see his internal struggle for control become an all-out war.
It wouldn't have made any difference, not with Adrian involved, he said.
The fingers around my hand tightened slightly as though he really might push me away this time. He didn't.
I mean it. I won't be that guy, Rose. I won't be that man who takes someone else's woman. Now, please let go. Don't make this any more difficult.
I ignored the request. If he'd wanted to get away from me, he could have. I splayed my fingers, touching more of his chest, drinking in the feel of that warm contact I'd missed for so long. I don't belong to him, I said in a low voice, pushing close to Dimitri and tilting my head back so that I could see his face clearly. So much emotion, so much conflict as his heart tried to decide right from wrong. Being pressed against him felt like completion. Sonia had said no couple could share one aura or one soul, but ours weren't meant to be apart. They fit together like a puzzle. Two individuals making something greater than themselves. I don't belong to anyone. I make my own choices.
And you're with Adrian, said Dimitri.
But I was meant for you. And that did it. Any pretense of control or reason either of us possessed melted away. The walls crumbled and everything we'd been holding back from each other came rushing out. I reached up, pulling us together for a kiss. A kiss he didn't let go this time. A kiss I didn't end by punching him. His arms encircled me as he lifted me onto the bed, one hand soon sliding along my hip and down to my leg. Already half bare, thanks to that poor tattered dress. Every nerve in my body lit up, and I felt that desire returned in him, and then some. After a world of death, he seemed to appreciate love more. Not only that, he needed it. He needed life. He needed me. Not just physically, but in the same way my heart and soul always cried out for him. What we did then, as our clothes came off and we brought our bodies together, became more than just lust, even though there was plenty of that too. Being with him after so long, after everything we'd endured, it was like coming home. Like finally being where, with whom, I belonged. My world, my heart, they'd shattered when I lost him. But as he looked at me, as his lips spoke my name and ran along my skin, I knew those pieces could come back together. And I knew with absolute certainty that waiting for this, for my second time having sex, had been the right thing to do. Anyone else, any other time, it would have been wrong. When we finished, it was like we still couldn't get close enough. We held each other tightly, our limbs entwined, as though maybe closing the distance now would make up for the distance that had been between us for so long. I closed my eyes, my senses flooded with him, and sighed dreamily. I'm glad you gave in. I'm glad your self-control isn't as strong as mine. This made him laugh, and I felt it rumble through his chest.
Rosa, my self-control is 10 times stronger than yours.
I opened my eyes, shifting to look into his. I brushed his hair back and smiled, certain my heart would expand and expand until there was nothing left of me. Oh yeah? That's not the impression I just got.
Wait until next time, he warned. I'll do things that'll make you lose control within seconds.
That comment was just asking for a witty Rose Hathaway quip. It also made my blood burn, which is why we were both surprised when I abruptly said, "There may not be a next time." Dimitri's hand, tracing the shape of my shoulder, froze.
What? Why?
We have a couple of things to do before this happens again.
Adrian,
he guessed. I nodded. And that's my problem, so put your honorable thoughts aside. I have to face him and answer for this. I will. And you... I couldn't believe what I was about to say. I couldn't believe I meant it. You still have to forgive yourself if we're going to be together. His puzzled expression turned to pain.
Rose,
I'm serious. I met his eyes unflinchingly. You have to forgive yourself, for real. Everyone else has. If you can't, then you can't go on either. We can't. It was one of the biggest gambles of my life. Once I would have run to him without question, ignoring our problems, overjoyed just to be with him. Now, after everything I'd been through, I'd changed.